chapter 20. We normally would be following right through where Anthony left off, who did an incredible job, and his family. And the word from them is they absolutely adore you guys and are so thankful for your hospitality and love for them. We will see them on their way back from Niagara Falls. They'll stop and see Gail and I. I don't know if they're going to see any of you, but they're going to come and see us, and we're thrilled to get a chance to just say hi to them in person, and so thankful. And I know that he kind of went through, and Dave kind of went through right through where we were in the scriptures, and now I come home and I'm going to go someplace else. But it's interesting that Luke 21 takes place around the time that we'll be in next week in Matthew 21, when Jesus enters Jerusalem and then goes to the temple. We're already at the temple, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But we start in chapter 20, verse 45, through a little bit of, before I do share with you from the scriptures about this, so many impacting things in the trip, and I'll try to bring out a few of them in the study. This is a study that I gave after teaching where we had pastor's conferences, two places we went, and you guys had the schedule here, so I'm not going to go over that. Two places, or Gail. So it was, and they were new to the teachings, not completely, about grace and the law versus grace and the clear teaching of the gospel. And it may sound arrogant, and I don't want to be arrogant, but I want to say that, and then sharing about marriage, it isn't that nobody ever goes to Malawi and shares well and good and wonderful teaching, because they do. But they don't go, I've been able to go with either John Eastwood or Scott Biondi or Gail and I to reach a couple thousand pastors over the 24 years. And pastors in places that don't go to the city or have somebody come and do a conference inside the city or do a evangelistic outreach. In my opinion, the least thing they need there is us to do evangelism. They do it every day all the time. I'm not saying it's not a good thing, but to teach people about the grace of God in a way that we are used to and find grace in here. To share about interpersonal issues the way we do in marriage conferences, and Gail sharing her childhood story a bit, and the pain and the challenge and the rejection, things that they keep very underneath the surface there. You know, people in our country, in some regard, are free to speak freely about stuff, right? You guys going to coast, you know, and those of you who've traveled in other third world places, people are pretty tight-lipped. And so whether it was the sharing of the gospel, and Dave's done it, and Dave's been with us, and it's been wonderful, and will again. And I just don't think, and what they tell me all the time is, we just don't get people like, you know, you and Dave and Gail and those coming out to these villages. And didn't know I was going to get emotional. Just speaking directly to our hearts, and we realize that pain is pain wherever you go, and suffering is suffering wherever you go, and hope is hope wherever you go. Lord, would you minister your grace to us in Jesus' name? Amen. So the teachings that we give on marriage start with everybody brings, because we did marriage conferences as well. You know, that was part, big part of it. And I shared, you know, everybody brings bags into their marriage, but it's not like the man's tools or the woman's cooking supplies. It's emotional bags. And not only, and I, of course, developed this, but you guys can hear it quickly. Not only do you not know what is in your mate's bag, no matter how well you thought you knew them before you got married, suddenly things start coming out. You go, you have that in your bag? Not only that, but when you get married, over time, you find out things that were in your bag that you didn't know were there. But they're brought out by the person that draws closest to you, that you're called to be one with in Jesus Christ. Now, for those of you who aren't married, it doesn't mean there aren't other ways God does exactly those things in your life, but we're talking about that specific issue. And so then when I was able to teach on the Sundays, some of them were right up against those everywhere I went, I taught this basically this study that I'm going to share with you. And in chapter 20 of Luke, we find Jesus has gone to the temple courts with the disciples, and this is where they are questioning him, challenging him. They are really trying to fight him and confront him and make him look stupid. That's a real bad idea. And Jesus reveals that he not only can answer all their questions, but he confronts them with questions that they cannot answer themselves. And then he says in chapter 20, verse 45 of Luke, "Then in hearing of all the people, he said to his disciples, 'Beware of the scribes who desire to go around in long robes, love greetings in the marketplace and best seats in the synagogues and the best places at feasts, who devour widows' houses, who devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers. These will receive greater condemnation or judgment.'" So, you know, he goes to the temple. What could go wrong at the temple? What could go wrong at church? You're not laughing. All right, because you know plenty. Plenty can go wrong. The abuse of authority that was going on here, the focus on taking people's money, taking advantage of widows by going and praying for them at their houses and then taking from them their stuff. I don't know that this widow that we're going to read about next went through any of that, but that's the next section. And, you know, we divided chapters much later than the way Luke wrote or any of the writers. They just wrote. And he looked up in verse 1, chapter 21. He looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury. And he saw also a certain poor widow putting in 2 mites, smallest coin they had. So he said, "Truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all, for all these out of their abundance have put in their offering for God, but she out of her poverty put in all the livelihood that she had." Now again, I'm not being demeaning. I do know how it goes in third world developing or non-developing countries. I know how it goes in some places in this good old USA, where the pressure to find money and increase the size of your church is so present on people's minds. And I said, "I suppose you think I'm going to talk to you about giving out of your poverty financially." And this is the furthest thing from my mind as I read this story. So rest assured, though that may be a wonderful thing to give financially as she did out of your poverty, there are layers to this that go far deeper than money. And in that culture, the rich were thought to be so close to God, so blessed by God, and the poor were thought to be cursed, punished even. And Africa has some of that emphasis, and there's places, as I said, in the USA with the same misconception. And as I looked out, and I saw men and women in Malawi in such abject poverty. But as I saw the women sitting on the mats on the floor, sometimes they were the women on this side and the men on this side. And I thought, I can't imagine some of the stories if they were told that these people would tell me if they were told about the kind of abuse and difficulty they've been through, and just the hardness of the culture. And not just the women, the men. One of the things that we talk about, in the East, they're very big on respect, showing respect. And we tell them, I always say, you guys have us beat. You teach children to respect their elders. You teach respect. You reveal respect in your culture. Some of you have heard some of this before, but many haven't. So bear with me if you've been with me on all of this. So, you know, you teach that. And you know, in our country, we used to have that, and it's gone downhill. The respect issue has really gone down. And yet we did have a time where we learned about nurturing children, about nurturing relationships. And that's a healthy thing. But we kind of left off respect. But let me, and in many ways in the marriage conference, in many ways every time I teach, I say, I want my children, my daughter and her husband and children are here with us today. And I'm thankful for you guys being here, visiting us. I want my wife, my children, my grandchildren, this church family, I want you to respect me because you actually respect me, not because you're forced to show respect. And the problem there is the pressure to show respect doesn't automatically mean you respect. Wouldn't it be better to combine the best of both worlds, the nurturing, the embracing, the listening, and patience with them, and the respect, responsibility? You have to teach children respect, but the goal isn't that they have to show you respect. You know, influence is greater than control. And so while you're in the room with somebody, while you're in their life and they're under your roof, while you have amount of control over them and you exert that control, you can get them to do what you want. But as soon as they leave your control, they're going to do what they really want to do. And if you've influenced somebody, you've influenced them to do what's right when you're not looking, when you're not there, when you're dead and gone. And you can influence somebody 12,000 kilometers away across an ocean, but you can't control them. And I don't want to. So they have a concept. We have a concept. We have misconceptions. They have misconceptions. But it's hard to think of some of the abuse that could end up mixed with the poverty. This woman that we read about today, there was no way any of these disciples would have paid attention to her had not Jesus brought her up to them. They were men of their good men, you know, they wanted Jesus minus one. They were guys who loved Jesus and were growing and learning, but they had a long way to go, didn't they? And one thing that would not be on their mind as they're watching the rich put in and trumpets sounding and the flowing robes and all the glory going to people as they gave in front of other people to be seen of men. Here's this poor widow putting in her last two pennies, we'll say. And he says, you see this woman over here? Yeah, I guess. Oh, okay. I mean, like, no second thought. No one in that area, in that courtyard, would be paying attention to her except Jesus. And I think she was probably old, though it doesn't say she was an old widow, but it's obvious she's poor by her clothing, I would think. But Jesus knows through the revelation of the Father how much she had, how much she gave, and who she was, right? Jesus operated as a man filled with the Holy Spirit, not just as God, just doing whatever he wanted as God. He was in submission to the Father, and it's one of those great mysteries in the Bible about his deity being clothed in humanity so that he operated as a man filled with the Spirit, not just as God, always knowing everything and doing everything under his own Godhood. And that's, I'm not going to try to, that would be an hour-long, you know, discussion. And you'd still go, okay, I'm not sure I understand, so why don't we just say we don't understand that fully? That's just a good way to go. We don't. But we know that as the Father revealed, I only do those things the Father shows me. As a man filled with the Spirit, he knows. And he doesn't say, but if she had kids, children, where were they? How was she this broke? That means they've abandoned her. So she may have been a widow that never had children or had children who were not taking care of her. And no one coerced her. And no one cared. No trumpet sounding. She had zero influence in the world as far as we can tell. Except to Jesus. Like in Malawi or even in a small burg 30 miles from Albany called Wilton, New York. No influence, no control, unnoticed. She came, unnoticed, she left, almost, but not at all, really. Jesus sees her. Jesus points her out to the disciples who would never in a million years think about her. A widow alone and no kids, her last two coins. Did she know the story of the widow with her son that we read about in Kings with Elisha when he said, bake something for me and then use your last stuff on you, but the oil kept going and the food kept going, those different stories. Did she know those? I don't know. We do know she didn't say this. God, you've taken everything else from me. You might as well have this too. Throwing her pennies into the offering in disgust, anger, frustration, and hopelessness. A whole heap of people in our world, that would be their attitude, absolutely, in her shoes. You've taken everything else. You might as well have this. Feeling self-righteous and, you know, there's that energy you get from being angry and frustrated. You can feed off of that for a long time and hurt yourself deeply and those around you. But she worships. She doesn't say you took everything else, take this. She worships in giving all that she has to everyone else. If they were watching, it could be a joke to them. It could be meaningless. But it wasn't to Jesus. It's not meaningless to Jesus at all. He sees and he knows. And you know whose opinion matters? Whose opinion matters in your world? Some of us in this room, the opinions of others dominate so much of our thinking. What about Jesus' opinion? What about his opinion? Would you say that might be more important than all the rest of it put together? What is Jesus' opinion? Because for Jesus, it's not really an opinion, it's absolute truth. So she worships, she gives all. She gave more than everyone else. He sees it. He knows what no one else does. New York, he knows each of us thoroughly. Do you believe that? He sees your issues completely. And listen to me. He sees heaven's view. Heaven's view of your story. The only one who fully sees heaven's view of your story is the one who came from heaven and went back to heaven and is taking you to heaven. You see, it's a view that you and I don't even know of our own story. You only know so much of your own story. I know some of you may balk and say, I know my story thoroughly from a viewpoint that is limited by your own knowledge and experience. I'm not saying it's meaningless. I'm not saying it doesn't hurt. I'm not saying it's not real, but you don't see it all. And you don't need to be a brain surgeon to figure this out. You cannot see it all. He sees our issues completely in heaven's view of your story, and it's a view that you don't even know. Listen, the Gospels, all of them, and Luke is written 30 to 60 years later than the events around the 3.5 years of Jesus' ministry. Are you with me? Okay. She's long gone to heaven before she ever knows the story we're talking about. I don't have any confidence that Jesus snuck away and said, oh, by the way, I just talked about you to my disciples, and here's what I said. Or that one of the disciples said, ooh, I'll go tell her how Jesus praised her. That is very, very, very is that she went on trusting in God, maybe hearing about more about Jesus, believing in him, as certainly she's given such credit here. But when she gets before the throne of God, welcoming and embracing her, now she knows her own story from heaven's view. What a moment that would be. Imagine finding out your story, your moment, not only seen by God, but declared to the entire universe. It's 2,000 plus years later, and we are talking about her, and she's been talked about and read about, and she's been influencing generations upon generations upon generations of people. And in her story, there's likely much pain. If you or I tomorrow, not tomorrow because it's Memorial Day, Tuesday, received in the mail a check for $10,000 anonymously given to you. We just want to bless you in the name of Jesus. And you took that, and I took that $10,000 and said, you know, the church takes care of me. I'm set in my life fairly well. There's some things we could use. There's some things we could do. But, you know, I just came back from Malawi, and you could make your own story about what you would do. And, you know, I'm just going to give that to the work in Malawi. I'm not promising I'd do that, the whole 10 grand, you know. But if I did, or you did, gave what came to you in the mail miraculously, all of it away to honor the Lord, that would be a wonderful offering to God. There's no question. That's great. We're not mocking it. But that giving of something that comes to you from the outside, you decide to not keep it but give it away, as good as an offering as it is, it can never touch what you give to God from the deepest part of who you are. And I have talked about this, I know, but this is what I shared, that I know, I'm confident, I hope I'm not arrogant. I talked to them about the bags the way we did, Gail's story the way she did, and then the teaching the way we did about pain. And, you know, I can remember the day I was saved, and I talk about it, and it's a wonderful, glorious memory, and I can recall it in a sense, and I can recall the day we were married, and that was a glorious day, and I can recall when my daughter was born and my son, but especially my firstborn, looking into her eyes that couldn't see me, but I thought they could until they said, yeah, they don't really see for a couple days. But I said, don't ruin my moment. She looked right at me. And, you know, I was in the room. Tell the Malawians, I was in the room with the a nurse and I actually kind of delivered the baby when the midwife was tooling around, finally came in just at the very end. And I said, I know, in your country, men are pushed out of the room. In our country, they're dragged into the room. We're dragged in there. Most of the culture's history, you don't have men in when women are having babies. Did you guys know that? I mean, all of history. But I'm not complaining. I loved it. But we're a little different here. So anyway, I and these glorious moments in my life, I can feel an amount of joy, and I'm a fairly happy person with a lot of joy in my life. But I'll tell you what, as I've shared, my dad died suddenly when I was 15, and for almost most of my life since that time, it's now I'd have to really work at it, but all I had to do is think about that moment when the fireman, who was a Christian, But the main thing, that the moment when he said, I'm sorry, Mrs. Cohen, we've done everything we can, and he's gone. And that week of my dad dying, I can feel that pain. Today would be harder. I'd have to work at it. But for decades, if I thought about it for any length of time, I could recall it, and pain can be recalled like that. And you're there. Joy can be recalled, and maybe some of you have a different experience, then you're welcome to that. But for most people I talk to, they would agree, I can recall and feel the pain of the hurts, rejections, failures of my own or others in my life far more readily and deeply than I can recall the joy. Now, my opinion is that that is based in your fallen nature, that we're in a fallen world, and that those things are burnt into your fallen nature, and if you allow them, they can cripple you. I can talk about it very freely because I've learned how to give it to God and to be freed from it, but it doesn't mean I can't recall it. So in her story, I think there was much pain. When we give God from our poverty, from our weakness, from our need, we're actually giving him more than when you give him your giftedness. And I'm not, now I could sound like I'm mocking giftedness. I believe in being gifted and empowered and having gifts to give God, okay? It's a wonderful thing. But it's not the same thing as giving your deepest, deepest, deepest sorrow, pain, failure, even emptiness. And when this verse came to me in this way, I was asking God why he would make me the way I am with these certain desires that were clearly godly kind of things, but he wouldn't let me fulfill those purposes. Like, why would you make me this way but not let me do these things? And the answer I got, you know, and it wasn't a voice from heaven, but it was as clear as a bell in my heart. Rick, I didn't create you, number one, to do these things, to use your gifts. I know that some would argue with me. It's okay, have your own opinion. But I wasn't created, number one, for my gifted to worship my Creator in every state I'm in every situation in life. It's something that once you get it, it doesn't mean you never stumble, but you know you can't leave it for other things. I was created to worship God Revelation 4:11, for your glory, for your power, for your purpose, all things were created for your pleasure, Lord. I was created for God's pleasure. And I'm not saying it brings him pleasure to give me a desire and then not let me fulfill it. To get stripped down to the core of who you are. And sometimes to get stripped down to the core of who you are, it comes down to your absolute emptiness, brokenness, lostness, and pain. And he paid for that. And it belongs to him. And there is a way. There really is a way. For those of you who are going, yeah, but I don't get it. Okay, but there is a way to give that to him. And when he made that clear to me, I didn't create you, Rick, to be a pastor, to do these things. I created you first to serve, to love me, to worship me. And yes, I have gifts for you, but you can do what I created you to do no matter what. And it took, okay? It took. It was many years ago. And though I'm imperfect and stumble, that took. Because you know why? Not because of Rick Cohen and his opinion. It took because it's true. You were created for God. And for some people, because they don't really know him, that's not enough. I'm not saying that harshly. I'm saying you'd have to get to know him for who he is, for that to matter to you more than getting to do what you want to do. I'm never afraid to say that. I'm not worried about being arrogant here. I know what it means to have that freedom, and I know what it means to be locked into your tunnel vision, and you just can't see it because you're stuck in your own desire. And that's the biggest thing in your life is your desire. I was there, and it's not a happy place. And no matter what you get to do, you'll never satisfy it fully. But when you get stripped down to just you and Jesus, if that's not enough, then no wonder Christianity is hard for you. Will you think about it? Will you ponder it for a few minutes? That's why Christianity is hard for people, because we're trying to add it to our life and have it bless our life. We're not giving ourselves completely to the one who made us. And that may be a journey. It was a journey and is a journey still, for any of us who maybe can sense that. So, pain, the need, the poverty, the pain, it's imprinted in our souls, but it can be overcome, and it can become a great gift that we give to God, and it can be turned into joy. Jesus said, that which is going to cause you pain, disciples, my death, you're going to sorrow while the world rejoices, but your sorrow will be turned into joy. One of the pains that does get forgotten, women, you can decide whether you agree with this. Gail said it, not me. So is that the pain of childhood Jesus is talking about. But we know a strong connection, all of us do, to pain inside if we've lived some life. And if I understand giving myself to God includes my pain, and that's my worship, it doesn't necessarily mean the pain goes away immediately forever. Now, if you're looking for a trick, a mathematical equation to get the pain to go away, and that's your number one goal, I don't think you're going to be happy after this study. If you're looking to know that you can offer yourself to God no matter where you are, and if you understand this, from that day when the Lord spoke those words in my heart, and then I read this section about this woman, sometime in that frame, and went, oh, I will never have a day when I say, I just don't have anything to give God. That will never be true for me again. And it has never been true for me since that day. Because I know that whatever is in me, even complete emptiness and lostness, that's what I have to give God. And it matters to him more than $1 million or all the giftedness I could ever be and do. Some are able to receive this right now. Some maybe it'll take some time. Pain, emptiness, fear, loneliness, whatever's deepest within you, God does not reject you, even if it's dominating you. But he is calling you. He is calling you to himself to believe that he already knows and more. I'm thankful for the scars. I'm thankful for the scars that you took because he experienced it on the cross. Worshiping God in song is wonderful. Giving financially and sacrificially is important and it's beautiful. But this is a worship that's much more than a song we sing or money that we give. So what might you have in common with that poor widow today? Plenty. Jesus sees her condition of life, her condition of heart. He sees you too. Do you believe that? Jesus knew her and all that she was giving and that she was giving all. Jesus knows you and he knows what you're actually giving to him. Do you believe that? He knows what you're actually really giving to him. Placed extreme value on her offering and he places extreme value on what you give him from your heart. Jesus honored her giving in the presence of his people and Jesus honors you and I when we give ourselves to him in the presence of the Father and the angels above. Here, there's no one like Jesus. There's no one who can take your pain and turn it into an offering of great value except the one who took it on the cross for you. And he said these words and he meant them. He experienced it. My God, why have you forsaken me? And into your hands, I commit my spirit. So, I pray that you and I can come to a place, because I still probably have a place to go there. I haven't figured it all out. All my communication doesn't mean I'm totally got this wired. And I don't know what's coming, do I? But I know my purpose in life. Nobody can take that away from you. But if you give it away, because you're too wrapped up in your feelings. Rick, that's so harsh. You don't know what I'm feeling. Of course I don't. I've stared at hundreds of Malawians that have been through things that I'll never understand on this earth. But you know what? I saw hope glow in people's faces. I saw people close their eyes and lean their heads back and take in something that they just needed to hear. And I was just had the opportunity to be, and Gail did, a vessel because of your guys' sacrifices to let us go. Quite frankly, we spent less money than somebody would go on two people on a safari to Africa and got to reach hundreds of people. So it's not really that much money, even though it's a lot, you know, to go there. What a blessing. But what a blessing to be right here, right now. What a blessing to be anywhere and know that God has not forsaken you. That he knows your pain. And that you always have something to give him that's precious. And maybe as we learn to do that, that pain begins to become less and the joy becomes more. Grace to come up.